Hello, folks, and welcome to the Paul Revere Show. This is attorney Mark Thompson. We are here on the Devil's Radio on the Shaw every Monday night at from 7 to 8 p.m., WAUK 540 a.m., and 101 or 92.7 FM. It is a beautiful fall night. It is the Monday after another Packer victory. We eked it by, but so with the sun out and the Packer victory, people are in a good mood. As you all know that we have been on the air for quite a while now. I don't even know how many shows it's been, but we are here talking about democracy in the state of Wisconsin. And recently we've had several guests who are running for office trying to bring a progressive fresh view to politics. Tonight, we're a little different. Tonight, we're here with Mr. Daryl Morin, the president and chairman of the board of Forward Latino, which is a 501c3 charitable organization. And we're here to talk to Daryl about Forward Latino's mission. But before I invite Daryl to start talking, hey, Daryl, let me just share with you a little bit that I picked up from his webpage. Daryl is the president and CEO of Advanced Wireless Inc., serving customers in 14 countries. In addition to his professional efforts, Daryl serves on the board of the Greater Milwaukee Foundation and the Milwaukee Jewish Museum. He's a board secretary of the Employ Milwaukee and is vice chair of the board at the Hmong American Peace Academy, our nation's largest Hmong population-serving educational institution. For his many philanthropic efforts, Daryl was named Hispanic Man of the Year by UMOS, named a Friend of Education by the state of Wisconsin, named to the United Way of Greater Milwaukee's Philanthropic Five, and more. Daryl is a charter member of the Archdiocese of the Milwaukee Justice for Immigrants Committee and a founding member of the Latino Jewish Alliance. He also served as the LULAC National Vice President of the Midwest and was responsible for all advocacy and service programs for the 12-state region. He is a graduate of the University of North Texas, a proud husband and a father to two sons. So welcome, Daryl.
Mark, it's so good to be with you this evening.
And I really, really appreciate your time. So let's jump right in here. Tell our listeners, what is Forward Latino and what is its mission?
Well, Forward Latino is actually a little over 4 years old now. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan service and advocacy organization. In that short span of time, we've grown to have members in about 29 states, as well as affiliates. And our mission is really to empower our affiliates and our members so that everybody, especially those in the Latino community, can have an equal opportunity, not to be given, but an equal opportunity to earn the American dream.
So here we are in 2022. What is that American dream? What is Forward Latino's vision of that American dream?
Well, I tell you, that's something that with the divisive politics we have right now across the country is something that's really in question. You know, who would have thought that we would have seen an insurrection and attack on our Capitol, right, in our generation or our lifetime?
Yeah. Believed we would have let the Confederate flag fly in our Capitol, right?
Exactly. So when you take this and you layer it with all these other systemic issues we've had, you know, we know that we have our work cut out for us. You know, we just want people who are willing to work hard, et cetera, to have an equal opportunity to achieve. And, you know, when you look at issues from education, right, the quality of an education and investment we put into one child because they live in this city or this municipality versus the next, you know, are we really giving them that equal opportunity? When we see the differences in leadership, even in corporate America, we know we have issues there. But, you know, something that's become just so plain to so many is regardless of your immigration status, if you're a person with prominent Hispanic features, chances are you've been either physically or verbally attacked over the last 4 to 5 years with all this inflammatory rhetoric that we've seen going on across the country. And Mark, you were kind enough to help us out on an issue or two. You know, we helped Mayud Viles right here in Milwaukee, a United States citizen who had, you know, was told to leave the country, was told to stop invading the country, and had acid thrown in his face. That shouldn't happen to anyone, regardless of immigration status, in a country that proclaims to defend and be the champion of freedom. We helped Natalia Miranda, 14-year-old girl, simply walking to school. But she had prominent Hispanic features. She's a United States citizen. And a woman decides to run her over with her SUV because she looked Mexican. And she confessed to that. I mean, these are the challenges. You know, it's one thing to say, we want to give people the opportunity to earn, or you know, the American dream. But people in a free society shouldn't have to fear for their lives as well.
Right. Everybody should be able to walk down the street, say what they want to say with respect and be treated with respect. Absolutely. Yeah. So before we jump more into sort of the priorities of Forward Latino, tell us a little bit about the work you do in these 29 states around this great USA.
Well, an awful lot of our time has been spent working on the issue of immigration reform. We all know that it's broken, et cetera. We can get into that a little bit more here if you'd like to. But we're finding ourselves spending a lot of time not only on addressing these hate crimes, et cetera, but working on the issue of gun violence prevention. If you're Hispanic, you're twice as likely to die as your white counterpart from a firearm. You're four times more likely to be wounded by a firearm. And we continue to see case after case across the country where individuals are hunting Hispanics. Who would have ever thought that that could happen? So we're spending a lot of time there. Obviously, civil rights, you know, including voting rights into that and fighting some of the injustices we're seeing, because, you know, everybody's vote should count the same. They shouldn't be diminished. They shouldn't be kept from voting. You know, and other social justice issues. But a huge concern amongst our population is economic mobility. We did a study here with some of our partners in the Metro Milwaukee area. And what we found is Latinos had a very high workforce participation rate, yet still had a really high poverty rate. So how can you work 2 to 3 jobs and still live in a situation of poverty for you and your family? So that's something we're working quite a bit on.
So let's just touch sort of the demographics of Wisconsin. You know, yeah. We're here broadcasting out of Waukesha. Waukesha has a very interesting history of Latinos and Latino accomplishments. But I think a lot of times, a lot of people are unaware of that and really don't know the history. What can you tell us and the listeners about that vibrant Latino community in Waukesha?
Well, I'll say in general, Hispanics are now the largest minority group in the state of Wisconsin. So well over 450,000 of us here, you know, over 170,000 to 180,000 eligible to vote because of age and status, et cetera. And, you know, study after study that we found from all these chambers of commerce really point to the Latino community really being that accelerator for economic growth here, because simply put, Wisconsinites are aging. You know, the population is a much older age, and they need the Latino workforce here to come in and to the jobs that won't be filled otherwise. So,
yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. My mother used to live up in Washira County, Watoma. My sister still lives up there. Sort of, you know, dairy farms surrounded. But, you know, we have so many farms that are being sustained now with Latino folks on the farms. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I can tell you some of our strongest advocates on the immigration side are actually the Wisconsin dairy farmers. They wouldn't, you know, they acknowledge that they wouldn't survive without that immigrant labor. And today's visas are only really good for seasonal workers, and cows need to be milked year round. And if they're not, if they go too long, they'll actually won't continue. They won't be able to. They'll pass on. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah, well, that's what I know. Yeah. I mean, milking and milk, yeah. a lot of farms milk not only twice a day, some three.
Exactly. And you know,
and they milk in the middle of the winter and on New Year's and every holiday.
Yeah. And that's, you know, on the immigrant side. But then you have all these people all the way up to the highest levels, you know, whether it be at GE Healthcare or Rockwell Automation or some of these other corporations, right? And everywhere in between, Latinos are now starting businesses in Wisconsin faster than any other group. And when you start a business, you're creating jobs. So once again, I think that the future of Wisconsin is really tied to the support and the growth of Wisconsin's Hispanic community.
So in your experience and the work Forward Latino has done over the last 4 years, what is the message that is being really used or resonates amongst all people in terms of breaking down these divisions based on hate and narrow-mindedness? I mean, what do we need to do to address this?
Yeah. Well, I think for so many, right, it's living our faith to a certain degree, right? Respecting human dignity, you know, not judging somebody, prejudging them based on their appearance or what you think may be their economic status, et cetera, but giving everybody an equal opportunity to prove themselves and to contribute. You know, I walk into churches and synagogues, et cetera, and I see these hardworking people, you know, that just want to be a part of something great, that just want to provide a better life for their children. And let's, if we just live up to the principles that we find in our Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, you know, we'd be much better off.
So folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. I'm here with Daryl Morin, President and Chairman of the Board of Forward Latino, and we will be back after the break to talk more about its mission, its work, and what does it mean to create a more perfect union, right? That's what we want to do, build a more perfect union in this United States. This is Attorney Mark Thompson, and this is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night at WAUK 540 AM, 101 or 92.7 FM. We are here this evening with Daryl Morin, President and Chairman of the Board of Forward Latino, a charitable organization. We've talked a little bit about the mission. But you said a couple of things before the break, Daryl, that I really wanted to go back on. The, you know, we were talking sort of Latino numbers in the state, but if I'm looking right, I mean, there's in the country as of 2020, there were over 32 million eligible voters of Latino descent, right?
Yes, sir.
And so so we have folks from all over, you know, the world, but also that have been part of this United States, you know, this North American continent from the very, very beginning, right? I mean, you know, Texas, Florida, New Orleans, and we, you know, California. I mean, how could I forget California, New Mexico, Arizona? Right. So, I mean, you know, we my cousins live in Seguin, Texas. Right. Seguin, you know, fought against the Mexican government for independence when Texas thought they would go on their own. So, you know, this notion that somehow Latinos aren't part of us, meaning the greater perfect union of the United States. To me, you know, it's really astonishing that, you know, that we still have so much hate. And it's really defeats, I think, where we need to go and we have to go. Yeah, and I want to touch on this a little bit, because you said that you've been doing a lot of work around immigration. And, you know, I heard that you were actually went down to the border. So tell my listeners, what was that trip about? Who went and what did you find out?
So, Mark, thanks for asking that question. And I'm going to back up just a little bit further because I really want to highlight what you just said about Latinos really being here from the beginning. And I had the great honor and privilege of being with the president here last Friday in the White House. And in his remarks, he looked at us and he said, you know, your history is America's history. And I really think that just puts it out there the way it is. You know, in the early days when George Washington was looking for the weapons to give the Continental Army before France would step in and others, it was actually a Spanish governor through the Spanish government that gave food and weapons so that they could sustain themselves till they could get more funding and weapons from elsewhere. So all the way back to the Revolutionary War, right, we've been playing our role. Per capita, we have more congressional Medal of Honor recipients than any other demographic, et cetera. So anyways, battle after battle, war after war, we continue to prove our mettle. But you were asking about our trip down to the border.
You brought that up. I think this is really important that you frame it that way. My family history is my great-grandfather on both sides came from Denmark. But they came late in the game. You know, I mean, the grandfather that I carry, the name Thompson, he didn't show up until 1914, right? And my grandpa was 14 years old and became a citizen. So, I mean, that my little piece of pretty white Danish ancestry is like babies on this dirt compared to so many Latinos. And I don't know. What is it? Are we not teaching our kids right or what?
You know, and it's funny that you ask that question, because when you stop and think about it, what do we really learn about Hispanic history, right? There's nothing in there other than maybe the battle, you know, battle at the Alamo, you know, that's it. But there's no talking about or education about, you know, the poll taxes that were put in place specifically to keep Hispanics out of the polling booth, how it took forever and a lot of court battles before Hispanics were actually able to serve on juries, right, et cetera. So all these inequities through time, yet you never tend to, all of those are left out of the textbooks. And when they're left out of the textbooks, that history is lost. But I did want to share one other quick thought with you, if you don't mind me, and then we'll come back to the original question you had. You know, right after Hurricane Maria, we're seeing the devastation of these hurricanes right now. 10 months, I should say, after Hurricane Maria, I took a tour of the island because most of the island was still without electricity. 10 months after Maria.
Right.
And while I was there taking video and pictures and testimony that I was going to take and share with members of Congress and at FEMA, one of the secretaries of the Puerto Rican government there, which is, you know, a Commonwealth of the United States, everybody there is a United States citizen, right, invited me to a service for a funeral that they were holding for members of the Air National Guard. You know, these men and women gave their lives and died. And we were there in this hangar with these giant American and Puerto Rican flags hanging, et cetera, you know, sobbing tears, hearing from the families, et cetera. And it hit me, and I got quite emotional over this. Here I am, you know, thanking these people and their families for their sacrifice. And yet the reason I was really down on the island was because our administration at the time would not give them the funds that were passed by Congress to help them recover from that devastating hurricane.
Right. So we're going to come back after the break and talk more about the immigration and your trip down to the border. But I really think it's, you know, when I think about a more perfect union, that means we have to tell each other's stories. We each have to know who participated in fighting for us. Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We will be back after a break. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. I am so pleased and proud to have with us tonight Daryl Morin, President and Chairman of the Board of Forward Latino, a 501c3 charitable organization that's really focused on making the lives of all Americans, and in particular Latinos, fulfilling. So, Daryl, we talked a little bit about immigration, but you took a recent trip down to the border, right?
Yes, we did.
So tell me, like, who went and what part of the border did you go to? The Canadian border.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
You know, for a number of months, I'm sure we've all seen it. We've been seeing our elected officials, particularly Glenn Grothman, Ron Johnson, even to a certain degree, Brian Stiles and others, talk about President Biden's open border policies. Now, we keep in contact with the Department of Homeland Security and others relatively closely, so we know what's happening. But we kept hearing about this open border and how they went down there and they saw it for themselves. So we put together a delegation of our board of directors, and we invited individuals from the Milwaukee Jewish Federation and a few others. And we went down to the section of border that they kept referring to, which is between Texas and Mexico. But unlike them, who only specifically scheduled meetings with people who agreed with them politically, we wanted to go down and speak with everyone. So we actually met with representatives from the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, right? We met with leadership from border towns because it impacts them. We wanted to hear what they had to say. We met with nonprofit leaders. We met with relief agencies. We met with, obviously, the immigrants themselves. And we actually went as far as meeting with representatives from the government of Mexico and their National Institute of Immigration because we wanted to hear from everybody. And what we walked away with is, yes, there is a crisis at the border. There are no open border policies. At that time we were there, pretty much all of the policies in the previous administration were still in place by court order, but they were still in place. So when you hear about record numbers of people being detained and removed from the country, it's because those are still in place and because we're still fully funding the Border Patrol and the wall is still there. Nothing's been removed, et cetera. So a lot of misinformation has been spread by these elected officials, sadly, I believe, for partisan reasons. But I mentioned the crisis. We went to these immigration camps, literally filled with thousands of individuals in the baking sun in the middle of the summer. You know, it's 95 to 105 in these camps. Don't have enough food, don't have enough water, et cetera. And I went there expecting to see people really downtrodden, et cetera. And while these people had just suffered tremendously, it was amazing to see the hope that they had in their eyes. These are people that fled the Northern Triangle countries while we were there, primarily, you know, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. And they left because of the extreme nature of violence against them and the poverty levels there. So they were exploited at home. On their trip up north, they were exploited and victimized again, only to get to the U.S. border where they could not get through and fell victims to the cartel once again. And if it weren't for these nonprofit agencies really creating these camps, you know, and giving them some degree of shelter, I don't know what they would do. But it was really horrific and sad to think that, you know, one side of the border, you saw this high quality of life, this opportunity. But across the river, on the other side of the fence, the human tragedy that was still taking its toll. And it's the first time ever, it's called Title 42, that we've invoked a rule, and the previous administration invoked it because of COVID-19, that pretty much for the overwhelming majority of folks, they're not allowed to even apply for political asylum in our country. First time in our country's history. So there is a tragedy down there. And sadly, certain elected officials are sharing disingenuous statements for political gain.
So, you know, let's talk, though, about this asylum question. Yeah. You know, because asylum is a legal means to seek refuge in the land where the Statue of Liberty is there to welcome the oppressed from around the world, right? So what is, you know, the legal status is asylum. So what did you learn down there on the border in terms of, like, who's applying? And, you know, I mean, we've had some governors shipping folks north, right? I mean, if I heard right, most of those were asylum seekers legally allowed in.
I'm so glad you're bringing that up, because that's an issue that we took up with Secretary Mayorkas on Friday, and we're continuing to effort. Right now, we continue to hear elected officials talk about all of these illegals overwhelming the border, and that's why the governors are sending them out. Actually, each and every one of them, it's not an exception. Each and every one of them has actually gone and requested asylum with Customs and Border Protection. The officers, the professionals at this, found them to have credible claims and gave them a temporary status to be present in the United States until their court date. So everyone that they're shipping over has already been vetted by Customs and Border Patrol, has been found to have a credible claim, and is awaiting a court date. There is absolutely no reason for them to be doing what they're doing, much less labeling them illegals, drug dealers, and human traffickers.
I don't want to walk away from this issue so quickly, Darryl.
Yeah.
You know, the asylum laws, the immigration laws on the books recognize that you can come to this country where we're trying to build a more perfect union and say, my place, my home, or where I'm coming from, is so bad, I'm entitled to refuge here in the United States. And you're right. I mean, I think that the news hasn't got this right. The fact that everybody that was flown north in this political game was here legally. Right?
Precisely. Precisely. And you know, fleeing either extreme poverty and extreme violence, or what we're seeing now out of Cuba and Venezuela, et cetera, you know, fleeing these extremist and dangerous regimes, seeking freedom. Yet we have these individuals who seek, you know, who want to be known as the defenders of freedom, trampling all over those rights, those God-given rights, right, that we've decided to enshrine in our most sacred documents here in the country.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think people forget that angle. So we are, you mentioned a couple other issues that we really hadn't got into that, you know, forward Latino what had really been focused on. This gun violence prevention, how is this had a really powerful negative impact on the Latino community?
It's created an awful lot of fear. You know, a couple years ago, there was a young boy who was shot at the Gaelic Festival in Gilroy, California, by a person who admitted to be hunting Latinos. The following week, we had the tragedy in El Paso, Texas. One of the greatest loss of life, you know, here in the country by an act of hate with a firearm. And we were shocked when we began to look into this, that the mother of the shooter had actually called the police 2 weeks before that tragedy and said, please, you need to take the semi-automatic weapon away from my son. He's not right mentally. He's a threat to himself and others. And the police agency in the state of Texas said, you know, ma'am, unless he's committed a felony, we don't have a red flag law, otherwise known as ERPO, Extreme Risk Protection Agent order law. Here in the state of Wisconsin, there's nothing we can do. And we went on to see what happened 2 weeks later. And time again, we continue to see people with firearms, you know, not just taking the lives of Latinos, but taking the lives of everyone. You know, when you look nationally, 88% of all voters, right? That's Republicans, that's Democrats, that's gun owners, that's non-gun owners, want universal background checks. Why? So that a convicted violent felon can't go online and simply buy a gun. Right. Everybody thinks it's on the books, but it's not. Yet special interests keeps holding up that that legislation from being passed.
You know, and it's amazing, or frankly, remarkable how the divide and conquer has really worked on this issue. You know, it's like, I'm a hunter, right?
But As am I. All my life.
You know, I got my shotguns. You know, I got my Henry rifle that, you know, from deer season, which is coming up pretty soon. But I mean, you know, these AR-15s and these clips, I mean, nobody hunts with them, right?
Yeah.
And frankly, most law enforcement wishes they were off.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, it's not safe if you're an officer out there, you know, running into somebody when all of a sudden you're outgunned. So what do you see in terms of the progress on that issue? How has your organization made movement on that? Where are we at?
Well, when we looked at this, we were shocked to find out we were really the only Latino primarily serving organization in the country dealing with the issue. So we started to build a coalition, and we tested it here in Wisconsin first. So I can share with you that almost every major faith throughout the state of Wisconsin is a member of the 80% coalition. And we called it that because that's how many people here in Wisconsin want background checks, universal background checks, and extreme risk protection orders. We've since expanded that, and we've now partnered with people like Giffords, Moms Demand Action, March for Our Lives, Brady Against Gun Violence, and other national organizations to really start sharing the information with people, letting them know how they can participate. Because, you know, special interests shouldn't be able to overrule the will of the people, and sadly, that's what's happening today.
Yeah, and without a doubt. I mean, clearly some small, powerful lobbyists, moneyed interests, are really holding our democracy back, our safer democracy.
Correct. Yeah. The CDC found and issued the report this summer. Firearms is the number one cause of death for all children across America. More than car crashes, more than cancer, more than any other type of disease. Firearms is doing that. Well, we had 11 school shootings a decade ago. We're going to, you know, last year we had close to 98 or 99, and the number is only continuing to grow. And now with our kids back in school, I hate to be the one to say it, it's just a matter of time before we get the next call of the next tragedy. The only question is it going to be in my kid's school? Is it going to be my son or daughter who's hurt? And that's why we need to remember people when they vote this year, make sure that they're voting for gun violence prevention.
Thank you. Now, there are a couple other priorities that I gleaned from your webpage, you know, Forward Latino, that maybe we can touch on. There's youth programs. What are you doing with young folks?
Yeah. Well, you know, so many of the folks in our community don't have a whole lot of professionals, right, that can mentor them and show them different options. So we do things such as Public Service Day, where we take a group of high school students and we take them out to meet with the mayor, to go and meet with all their men and all their women, or to go and meet with state legislatures, et cetera, to consider a career in public service. We'll do the same thing with manufacturing companies, you know, if they're interested in engineering and those types of things, just to expose them, you know, same thing with hospitals, expose them to what's out there, and to make sure that they can see people that look like them doing those types of jobs as well.
Before we go to our last break, before we come back, if folks want more information about Forward Latino or contact you, what's the easiest way to get hold of you?
Yeah, just www.forwardlatino.org or dial 833-LATINO, and that's with an O, not a zero, and then the number one, and you can give us a call.
Thank you, Daryl. Folks, this is the Paul Revere Show. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. We'll go to break, and then we're going to come back and wind this up talking about the vote. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. With me tonight is Daryl Morin. He's the president and chairman of the board of Forward Latino, a 501c3 charitable organization. Well, we are 35 days until Election Day, November 8th, Daryl. And what is the Latino vote look like? Let's go to it. We got the last few minutes. How do you see it?
Yeah. Well, it's a complex demographic. Everybody, and I think folks have been learning this particularly over the last couple of elections, that we're not a monolithic organization. Depending on your ancestry, where you come from, you look at things from a different context. If I, let's say, come from Venezuela, et cetera, I'm really concerned with dictatorships and socialism, et cetera. And once again, so if I come from Cuba, if I come from Mexico, Central America, South America, you can really have different priorities and different concerns. So it's important to tailor your policy and your messaging to address each one of those. You know, some people want to be called Latinos, others Hispanic, some Latinx, others Afro-Latino, right? So there's a lot of subgroups that come into that. But as I mentioned before, we are now the largest voting bloc, you know, across the country, and that holds true for right here in Wisconsin as well. And because of that, we're finally starting to see parties really begin to segment those markets and tailor policy and messaging for them individually. We are also starting to see more and more investment from the Republican Party in the Latino community, as well as for the Democratic Party. And it's healthy when both parties are working to earn your vote, but it's also very important that both of them be intellectually honest when speaking with you and passing policy as well.
So what do you see are some of the key issues that may be perceived differently depending on where you are on that range of Latinos in the broad sense?
Well, if I'm from a more affluent community, much like it is for white America, et cetera, I'll tend to be looking at some of the bigger picture items. I can share with you that the issue of abortion is very important for Latino women. You know, 57 to 60% say that that is probably one of their top one or two issues that they will be voting on this year.
And I'm sure that goes both ways, right? Because we have large religious communities and the Latino community generally, just like you do with white folks, right? I mean, I got family members,
exactly,
evangelicals, and, they vote one issue and, I try to tell them it's crazy, but hey.
we do have that as well. But the recent numbers that Pew put out from Pew is 67 to 70% of Latino women say that this is a key issue, and they're against overturning Roe v. Wade. So that is huge there. For the folks who are not as affluent, you know, it's the same thing that we see across many of the kitchen tables in white America as well. Right? How am I going to make it? So economic mobility. is a huge issue. You know, one thing we've seen out of this administration, we've seen a huge increase in workforce participation and people getting jobs just because there's so many jobs out there being created. With the tax credits and some of these other things we've seen a tremendous number of kids move out of families in poverty, right? Moving up, et cetera. But we have that. We have gun violence and crime, which we've already discussed as well. So those are, you know, access to health care. Those probably are the top four or five issues that you're going to see Latinos, you know, taken into consideration more than any others.
In terms of voter registration and get out the vote, I'm assuming the Forward Latino is involved in those activities.
Yep. And I'll share, in the 2020 election, the Latino population had the greatest increase in voter participation, which was good because we'd been lagging. I can share that within the next week or two, we're going to be announcing our Get Out to Vote effort here in the state. And without going into too many details, we believe it's going to be the largest Get Out to Vote effort by any Latino-led organization in state history. So we're very excited about that.
So, right. Thank you for leaking that a little bit.
Just a little.
Yeah, right. Okay. Without stealing any more thunder.
Yeah.
Without stealing a little more thunder. Yeah. What have you found out in terms of what's been successful in getting folks to register to vote and participate?
Well, I'll share this with you. Right now, we have a number of municipalities within the state of Wisconsin that are by law mandated to be providing ballots in Spanish language because they've met those thresholds there that have yet to do so. So we're working with our partners to do everything we can to make that happen. So just language is a huge thing that is, you know, sadly, there's so much confusion right now with all the recent changes coming down with regards to voting, et cetera, that we're really going to be spending a lot of our time on where to vote, how to vote, and how to make sure that, you know, you're doing everything properly, because so many of those safeguards that have been built into the system to promote democracy have now been stripped away.
If there is like sort of a goal on November for Forward Latino in this, you know, election arena, what do you see those goals? What are the goals?
We'd like to see the same turnout we did in the presidential election in 2020. It's always harder in an off year, right? Yeah. These are important races, but we'd like to see the same, if not a little bit better. So we're going to be working along with all of our other partners to make sure that everybody knows the importance to vote, right? Where to vote and how to vote. And we'll also be monitoring the various polls and having our phone number open to anyone who has questions or believe they've been wrongfully denied the ability to vote. They'll be able to talk directly with our attorneys.
We're coming up here with less than 2 minutes to go. If there is something that you want to tell my listeners, our listeners, about Forward Latino that we haven't talked about, what would it be?
You know, at the end of the day, I can talk about all these issues, et cetera, but we're really an organization just focused on protecting human dignity, right? Every child should have the same opportunity to grow up, to be successful, to raise a family of their own. Once again, we're not asking for anything to be given, but just an equal opportunity to earn and to have that opportunity. And sadly, to date, we failed. And we need everyone's help to make that happen.
One last thing, and we got 40 seconds. Active duty military guard and veteran assistance. You folks are active in that as well.
Yes, we are. I actually have a son who's serving overseas right now, but we've seen that some of these systemic issues occur even throughout the federal government. So if you're a veteran, if you're in the active military service or in the Guard or Reserve, and you feel like you've been wronged, please give us a call. We'll help take care of the issue with you.
Thank you so much, Daryl Morin. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. You've heard all about Forward Latino. Folks, help build a more perfect union. Thank you. See you next week.